Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox. I'm the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. This is EBN podcast number 33. Our guest is Rob Street Taco Eater Davis, the head honcho of Delta V Esports. Rob is extraordinarily talented, having built a serious following around his company Delta V Esports, and of course, a healthy streaming career as a Twitch streamer. Rob has accomplished a lot in gaming and esports, having ran a LAN center, helped players and content creators build their careers in gaming and esports, and raised a family of gamers in his household. In this podcast, Rob and I get to chat about history of esports, what it takes to be successful in the industry, and where the industry is going in the future. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Hey, y'all, it's Trent Knox back with another Esports Business Network podcast. And today I'm joined by none other than Rob Street Taco Eater Davis of Delta V Esports. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Hey, Trent, thank you. It's great to be here. It's a privilege.
No, it's my pleasure. I've been really looking forward to this for the past couple of weeks to having you on the show. We got to connect over Clubhouse and get to network a little bit. And I've been really enjoying my time on Clubhouse and getting to know people who are even, you know, in the same region, same market as me. And, you know, looking how we can work together to build bigger events online and offline in the Texas and southern region of the United States. But before we jump into all the business and everything, I want to let you have the opportunity to introduce yourself to the viewers and audience of the podcast. So Rob, take it and let us know how you got into gaming. How did you get into esports?
All right. Well, I guess first and foremost, I am my wife and I've been married 32 years and we've raised 6 kids together. Matter of fact, I did a TikTok today about the fact that we essentially, a big part of our family continuity and how close we are as a family has been a result of video gaming. And so I did this kind of fun spoof video on that. But I've been a gamer since 1978. I had my first game system, which was my uncle got me. It was the Atari for home television, as I remember, and it was Pong. And from that point on, all through this, so that was before, obviously, there were really consoles or anything, but I was an arcade junkie, spent a lot of quarters, Asteroids, Galaga were my kind of main games. And from that point on, everything, every PC game that came out, every console, and then, of course, when we started having kids, it just was a big part. I mean, I had my boys, too, my youngest boys, when a new Halo release came out, we ordered it. We were there at, you know, at midnight amongst 300 people getting the new game. And it just was that kind of an experience just for many years.
Yeah, that's amazing. When I was growing up, there wasn't much of arcade, but anytime I got to go to the arcade, it was usually with family. I guess it got commercialized to a degree, but you grew up with like mom and pop arcades.
100%. I mean, even before arcades, pinball, I mean, yeah, it's just, that was the whole evolution of everything having to do with gaming. I've been a part of just cause I'm an old guy.
Yeah. I wish sometimes I look back at like some of the old school photos of people bringing in their hardware and creating LAN centers and what it took to get the industry going. It wasn't as convenient as it is today. You know, you didn't just bring your mobile phone and, you know, get into a mobile tournament and just walk in with, you know, having paid the price of admission. It was really difficult back, you know, when esports was getting its footing. And it's still in its infancy, of course, but it's impressive to look at the guys like yourself who started early and have been in the industry for so long.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's been a progression of technology, right? And that's enabled a lot of amazing things to happen. But I am kind of sad because a lot of people never had the experience of any of those early days, and you can't get those back. So yeah, it was amazing to watch this journey of you know, gaming and then turning into esports, and then and looking forward to what the future is going to be.
So are you a Texas native, or did you grow up somewhere else?
I grew up in Southern California, and okay. We moved here about 16 years ago.
Oh, very cool. And have you always been an entrepreneur? I know that we're going to get into like your business now, but have you always had this entrepreneurial spirit?
You know, that's a great question, because when I look back on things, I always have been. I grew up with a single mom, and she did the best she could, but we didn't always have a lot of money. We rarely had a lot of money, if ever. And so as a kid growing up very young, my mom was a waitress when I was very young. And so I had to find ways to create opportunities to have money to get the things I wanted, candy or, you know, whatever it was. So I had my first business when I was 9. My grandmother helped me with that at swap meets, local swap meets in Los Angeles. And then from there, I had my next business at 11, another business at 12, and kind of always found ways, whether it was, you know, washing cars or things. I liked being in control of my financial destiny. And then as I got older and kind of thought, you know, wow, the world really says in my era that going to college is the thing that you should do and you should get a career. I'm not one that has regrets in life, but I look back and I think I never should have gone to college. I did. I went pre-med and actually left the fifth year of my education because I knew it wasn't for me. I should have always been an entrepreneur. So when someone asks me that, it's a tricky question, because today a lot of people look at the word entrepreneur and it's this, you know, has a lot of sizzle and it's this really, you know, you put it on your Instagram, you know, bio. But it's not that. It's like, for me, when people say, hey, I want to be an entrepreneur, my question to them is always, do you feel suffocated in a regular job? Like anything outside of being in control of what you do in that creative process and your own destiny, do you just feel suffocated? And that was me. So for 20 years, it was great. I was in the industry, as in the tech industry. I had some great jobs, though I never had a job for more than 2 or 3 years because, again, I would get suffocated. But it was great. It was a great learning experience. We raised our kids and whatnot. But I just think I'm one of those that have always had that. I just spent 20 years not really addressing it, and then thinking the whole time that I was in the corporate world in different places that I was broken, until I really started to look at entrepreneurs. But yeah, I think it's always been in my blood.
Yeah, that's interesting. So when you were growing up during that, you know, your adolescence and into college, what kind of community was there around gaming? And did you like participate in tournaments during that time period? Or was it just like, was it there or was it not there?
Well, I mean, you know, we have to put it in context, right? I mean, I got married in 1988. Okay.
Okay.
And I think the first official esports tournament, if you will, was something like 1978 or something. I think it was at Stanford. They did a LAN center kind of a thing. So to classify, you know, esports or competitive gaming or that kind of environment, it just didn't exist when I was young. And so I was an adult by the time, you know, when I was in college, when I first started playing Doom. So, you know, it really, none of those things really existed when I was young. What it was, you know, again, it was typical arcades and that experience, which now that's just more of a retro experience for people. So it wasn't until I was well into my mid-20s that I really started to see gaming in a different way take off.
Yeah, that's sort of the sentiment I hear from a lot of folks who grew up with gaming, but esports is sort of something we're getting the privilege of participating in now. It's happening now. It's, you know, it had a little bit of, you know, a steam period where we were getting the engines rolling early on, but now it's starting to get into full swing and really hitting its strides in growth. So when was the first time when did you have your first kid during this process? Because you said you had 6 kids. I'm sure that with that first one and getting him or her into gaming was like an eye-opening experience.
Yeah, our oldest is our daughter. She was born, that was 1990. And so our kids were all about 2 to 3 years apart. And so it wasn't until I left college in 1995. And from that point, you know, I spent way too much time playing games I worked on my studies. I was also racing. I was a competitive athlete at that point.
Oh, really?
But I had multiple all-night Doom tournaments with my buddies. And so it was always a part. But it wasn't until I probably finished. You know, it's interesting because the context is difficult. At my age, it's hard for someone, if you're under the age of 30, it's difficult to remember a time without video games, right? And then esports is a completely different subject. But it's very difficult for most people to comprehend that. So it's like, well, yeah, but I mean, my kids were, you know, as video gaming was growing, it was incredibly young. Things were incredibly expensive. And it wasn't until, what, 1980, when did the first Nintendo come out? Like mid-80s or something?
84, 86 or something like that?
What's that?
84 or 86?
Yeah, it was something like that because it was the year before that was the economic boom of arcades. They were just crushing it, $20 billion in sales or something, you know, revenue. And then Nintendo came out. And so we didn't, I mean, in the heat of all of our kids, my kids being very young, the first two, you know, it was still college. It was still trying to figure things out. And then when I left college and wasn't going to go into medicine anymore, then it was like, okay, I have to be responsible and, you know, get a career. But shortly thereafter, it's when gaming never left. It just became something, you know, that I just shared with my kids as they continue to grow.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you got into roles that were very gaming adjacent, technology, of course. What were some of the roles that you had during that time?
Well, I mean, I've always loved technology. I mean, when we first got married, we were living in San Diego, North County, San Diego, actually. And I worked for a company that's now out of business, I think, but was the reigning power in the PC world, which was Computerland.
Oh, cool.
And so I worked for Computerland for a couple of years. At the time when I remember sitting down in front of a Mac, as I remember the brand new Mac when it was actually original Mac that we were selling, and listening to the whole, you know, sound go on as we connected to the then new internet. And I was blown away at that point that there was this ability to see news and weather from all around the world. That's all that it was, right? That's all that it was. And from that point on, I've always been fascinated with the technology side. Funny story on this, on a piece of that, when I was about 17, I had a job during the summer at a local manufacturing facility. And my job was to run what was called the tumbler. And these guys manufactured the aluminum bodies for the Apple II PC. And the Apple II PC, I would take them as they were machined and they were drilled, and I put them in this tumbler with these rocks. It was like a big 55-gallon drum, and it rotated, and it took all the burrs and edges off. I had a friend whose family opened a computer store. I did work in there in sales and support when I was young. And so throughout the years, from hardware or software in one form or another, I've pretty much always been involved in the industry. While I'm not a hardcore tech person, like I don't enjoy building PCs, like it's not a hobbyist, I've always enjoyed where the technology could take us in terms of things we could engage with.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the first time hearing that and the going online. Do you remember your first experience playing a game online?
Yeah, I mean, I was blown away, and I was like crushingly disappointed. Number one, it was the fact that you could do it. Let's just back up. The fact that you could be on a game and communicate and be playing with strangers. Full disclosure, it weirded me out. Like, oh, I was like, I can't see these people. I don't know who they are. You know, I don't know anything about. And yet here we are engaging in this game. The disappointing thing of it was that it was always so unreliable, right? I mean, it's like the bandwidth was almost non-existent, and the difficulty in getting the games to be stable, you know, was always a challenge. And of course, that's done nothing but, you know, improve over time. So, initially, this is really, really difficult for, again, if I say someone under the age of 30, Trent, it's very difficult for people to understand how odd it was to connect with a live person via some digital method, right? Now, everyone picks up phones and they play, you know, my wife plays, she says she's not a gamer, and she really never has been a gamer, although she was a Guitar Hero rock star when we first bought it when it came out. But other than that, she plays Words with Friends, right? So she does this whole Scrabble thing, and she's got these people, and she's actually really, really good. That concept of interacting with people digitally is so, it's part of our genetic structure now. It's just kind of what we do. Back, you know, in the early days when you had the ability to connect, it was odd. It was kind of disconcerting because the world had always been, you know, either face-to-face content or, you know, contact or something by phone, which we were used to, or seeing a picture or a magazine. So it was, it took some getting used to. For me, I got comfortable with it very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super important, super unique. And I didn't have that experience. You know, I'm a little bit under that 30. I'm 27. So the earliest thing I can remember on AOL, there wasn't a multiplayer component. It was like a Hot Wheel game or something like that, where that was stat tracked. Everybody's, you know, stats were tracked and you could like get onto the leaderboard, but there wasn't like a direct multiplayer functionality. I kind of remember playing Doom as a young kid online, but it wasn't till much later with like Halo and Xbox Live that I think that it really, really rang true that esports and gaming was a real thing and will be similar to what it is today. And I know that there's a lot more growth to happen. So when did you move from Southern California to Texas?
We moved 16 years ago. So 2000, whatever that was, four, somewhere around there. I was working in Irvine, California, at South Orange County. And I just wanted out. I mean, I still have family there, my remaining family. And I mean, I never want to go back. It's just, I didn't want to raise my family in Southern California. So we had decided that we would come here and there was no looking back. We love it here in Texas.
Yeah. So now you're in Arlington and a lot's happened. So what I know you, there's probably a buildup here and maybe you can fill in some of the blanks, but what got you to build a LAN center? Why did you establish Delta V Esports?
So it's really simple. One of the things when I started looking at esports, because esports and gaming are two different things, right? I mean, they're inherently connected because the platform is that we're playing games. But the competitive side of it, as I began to watch what was happening, was unique in that. So let me back up. I started having some conversations with people in the industry. And matter of fact, I was here at the Arlington or at the Esports Stadium Arlington January 2 years ago when it first opened or whenever that was. Maybe it was last January, about a year ago. Anyway,
it
there
was almost
a
2 years ago now.
Yeah. So it opened. They announced it 2 years ago. I'm thinking it was a year ago, January, that I came to an event. And it just recapped something that was heavily on my mind. It might have been 2 years ago. The massive need in esports, and there's another article. Matter of fact, I think she's the general manager of Evil Geniuses came out. She was interviewed by something like the Esports Observer or something. Anyway, the massive need, all the money is being spent and was being spent pre-COVID on the 1% of gaming, right? These kinds of venues, the big teams, the franchises, all the high-end stuff. But the pathway to development of talent from players to coaches to broadcasters, all those kinds of things, didn't and still really doesn't exist. And so for me, the concept was, look, we've got to build a portal, a funnel, a way to get talent developed in a hands-on way that will allow people to take advantage of opportunities that are going to be just very normal in the world of esports. And so Delta V was built on that. It was a matter of me believing that, you know, I would see a lot of youth, you know, a lot, especially, you know, my kids, you know, millennial age kids, a lot of people your age looking around the world saying, hey, college isn't for me. It seems to be not the ROI that I thought it once was. I don't want to have a job. I know the digital world exists. I see people as influencers making a ton of money. I see the ninjas and, you know, the Logan Pauls or whatever. But I don't know how to get there, right? And I know that it's real. And then you're fighting the generation of my generation saying, it's not real, that's dumb, get a real job. And so it's a complex picture. When I started to look and realize that this problem of my generation not respecting and understanding the opportunity is real and would continue to grow, and then youth or younger people looking at it saying, well, it is real. That's, we've solved that one. I just don't know how to get there. So Delta V is a concept based on putting together development pathways that allow people to develop skills in a hands-on way. Eventually, we'll take this nationally and internationally locations, but also in an online way that can translate into real opportunities. You know, that maybe that's $500 a month for someone, maybe it's $500,000 a month for someone else. But getting to that point where you can align opportunities with skills is just not really there right now. And I'm even testing and messing with some stuff on the website about providing more of a service of Delta V, saying, okay, we're going to help you develop skills. We're going to motivate you and inspire you, but we also have to connect you to opportunities. So if there's an opportunity provider, like right recently, 100 Thieves put up, they're looking for a video producer or some video content creator. The difficulty is for someone that would say, hey, maybe I want that, is that they have no idea what it really requires. And so one, you know, one point would be that our staff would say, okay, you have the skill set. Let's go look at what this opportunity really is. You know, who would you really be working with, and what are the hours really like, and what are the job response, not what they put out on Indeed.com. So this connection, for me, the big drive of saying, yes, this is real. It's incredibly young. I mean, esports is, it's so young, and we don't give enough attention to that, but that's really where Delta V came from. Is, you know, the whole Delta V is an aerospace part of a formula. It's the difference in velocity, and the difference in velocity essentially by maximum fuel consumption. So for me, it's, you know, how fast can you get to your objectives of having, wanting to have a career or income or a lifestyle in esports and gaming? How much more quickly can you get there with us versus doing it on your own? But that's really it. Just this massive need of building the skills, matching the skills to the opportunities as they continue to grow.
Very interesting. I have a lot of questions, and even more questions now that you mentioned that physics and aerospace connection. But do you see a future where being a operator in esports is certification or license based?
I think we run a risk. It's a really good question. It's dangerous ground, in that I would say yes and no. And there's yes and no on all sides, you know, of the argument, because there are a lot of sides to it. The issue is, like, for us in a skill set, one of the things that we're going to create at Delta V over time is an ecosystem that can be, you can be part of the culture and the ecosystem that has skills, like, you know, for example, let's say I have a course coming up on March 6th that is going to be our content creator course for gamers. And so people can be here physically or they can be here online. But if you're here physically, you then get to be part of our Street Creator beta program, where you can come in and continue to create content and whatnot. The over time, we would want to certify in our tiered structure. So we have tier 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then Delta. We want to certify in our ecosystem that this person has a portfolio and it's been under our instruction, you know, kind of methodologies, but by the same, and that like a Fiverr, right? Someone could go and say, hey, I have this talent. I'm a graphic artist. My wife's looking for a graphic artist right now, as an example. Let me see your work. But we add to it, well, they've been in our system. We've helped them train and develop in this. But the challenge is, and the reason it makes it difficult, and the reason I say there's yes and no, is that certification is nice, right? It kind of says to an outside source, okay, this person's gone through some kind of qualification process. But by the same token, everyone can trash or support or like or not like your certification process. The most important thing to me is you developing hands-on skills. For example, this 100 Thieves job I was talking about that's on Indeed.com and everywhere. In all caps, it says, one of the qualifications, must have real, R-E-E-L, right? Must have a portfolio of work. So there's no certification that can substitute for a portfolio, a real, right? That says, this is what I've done. So yeah, we have like our coaching program that we're going to be releasing has a certified coaches kind of a stamp on it, so that, you know, we've validated that this person has the ability to coach in the way that we expect coaching to be done to get results for the players. But by the same token, you know, it's like, well, I mean, it's more about results for me than it is anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I have sort of the same goals. I've been offering my community sort of the foundation to pursue opportunities that you're providing and utilize these different platforms to gain experience, to maybe accomplish, if they are entrepreneurial, to accomplish finding a job at like 100 Thieves or something like that. You know, I look at other industries like bartenders and other entertainers and people in the fashion industry and think of how they, you know, get their credibility, validating factors and things like that. And I was a bartender for a while, and, you know, here in Texas, you have to get a license with the Texas Alcohol and Beverage Committee. And, you know, I look at the esports production side and think about producers, directors, showrunners, assistant directors, and people in that of that nature, and think, you know, the collegiate system like that I attended didn't provide me with the tools or skill set to be an operator out the gate. It didn't even help me build what you were talking about, a reel or a portfolio. I had to build all that in the commercial market through trial and error. And so when I hear about programs like yours, I think, you know, how do you evangelize about it? And how do you connect with the right people? Because millennials, not so much millennials, because I'm a millennial, but of course, Gen Zers are so interconnected to this neural link between their smart devices and the internet. And I'm finding that they don't really feel geolocated to anywhere. And I'm curious how that plays into, you know, participating in like a LA Thieves, you know, geolocated Call of Duty team, or anything that is, well, you know, if you have to be in LA to be a part of esports production.
You know, it's that is so. What we're facing right now is a lot of technology questions, right? Like number one, the technology side. Number two, the acceptance side. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is that people, you know, Gen Zs or younger, it's so intuitive to exist in a smart device in a world that has them. It's not like a matter of, you know, people don't realize and don't recognize, unless you're probably 30 plus, how life-changing Steve Jobs' approach to the iPhone was, with, you know, the idea that a computer could be handed to a five-year-old with no instruction and they know to pinch and zoom. Right. They know to swipe up. It's like the technology has become very intuitive, and the experience in the technology has become very intuitive. What the fight is, what the battle is people of my generation or older that are established in businesses are having a very difficult time with the concept that you may never, ever meet someone that works for you yet provides an amazing service or talent, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. It's really hard. Now, we're never going to get away, in my opinion, from having face-to-face contact and that need for face-to-face training and those kinds of things. But if anything that the COVID experience has demonstrated to us is the ease with which we can accomplish things we need to do virtually. Mm-hmm. Now, that will never, I don't think we're ever going to be, you know, what was that movie where they were all in space and that cartoon where, you know, like they all were fat, like, you know, sitting around on chairs and never interacting. And I can't remember what it was. And it was super
fun. Futurama?
No, it was I'll think of what it is. But anyway, yeah. I don't think we're going to go to a world where we never interact.
Oh, the Jetsons.
No, not in the Jetsons. It was a movie. It was like a Pixar movie. Oh, okay. I'll think of what it is. But the power in what we face right now is understanding. See, the for me, the problem is for millennials, you know, in my mind, Gen Zs and whatnot, is that this is a very intuitive world.
I remember it. Wall-E.
Wally. There you go. That was it. Yeah. Thanks, Wally. It's so intuitive to live in the digital world and interact digitally that it's confusing to look at someone that says in the old school, well, you need to, let me just give a more simple example. Let me break it down. If you going to college right now is not a positive return on investment in most cases. Now, if you want to be an accountant, a doctor, an engineer, please go to college, right? I mean, it's going to be necessary. But what used to be in my generation, get have a better life, get a better job because you can go to college, really doesn't exist anymore because your opportunity of income earning for those time, those years, as well as, you know, the debt you come out, all that kind of stuff. Well, guess what? Your generation and younger know that, right? My generation is still fighting to say, no, no, it's still great. It's still great. And not to say there aren't benefits to going to college. That problem is that the world says, well, you know, how can you be a content creator or how can you create something that you don't, you're not licensed or certified to do and make a living at it? It's not real. And then a younger person says, let's see, I can bring up Ninja, who signed a $60 million contract with Mixer at the time that he did it. Or I can go to Logan Paul with his podcast even now and all of his shows. And, you know, they can go through a whole slew of people that have no certifications other than they have a talent for producing a piece of content that garners attention, which in the end is a commodity that we exchange now. So that is going to be, over the next 20 years, that's going to be gone. We're just going to live in a world where certifications are less important. I could see a world where a surgeon is shows by their work from having learned virtually, because right now a lot of surgeons can do study in a virtual setting where they're not actually on a patient doing surgery. But I can see a time where it's more, I know this sounds ridiculous. It's not even that you pass boards or there's a certification, but you can demonstrate through a portfolio of work that you are capable of this, of that skill set. And, and then it's validated through a quality or a quantity and quality of work or something like that. But the bottom line is that people, This gaming and esports and this ability to have skill sets all around it, some things have to be physical. If you're going to be here in the stadium, you know where I'm at right now, and I can tell you a whole story about what happened last night. But if they're doing a presentation and there's cameras and shoutcasters, there are physical needs of jobs that have to be done you can't do virtually. But that's getting even, that list is getting smaller and smaller and smaller all the time because of, you know, technology and things we can do. So the benefit is, let's worry less about certifications and structure and those kinds of things in jobs, and let's get more hands-on experience that also unleashes your creativity. Don't be confined by, you need to do this certain list of things because this is the way this camera operates. Well, you know, I want you to be able to say, yes, be safe, operate the equipment correctly, but what if you did this with the camera? You know, let people, allow them to unlock some creativity within a skill set that advances the experience of the end user.
Yeah, well, that's so, there are a few things I think on my mind. The first thing I'm thinking is, I took a course when I was attending the University of Hawaii called Digital America. And one of the components of it, we studied a futurist named Douglas Rushkoff, who said that we are a cyborg entity with the way that we're connected to technology now through our smartphone that we carry around with us everywhere. And what that didn't really mean anything to me until, like, right now I'm thinking about it a little bit more. You know, Elon Musk mentioned it on the Joe Rogan podcast about being a cyborg entity, but it's even more so that for Generation Z, and I can't remember what they call the generation after that now, but the virtual avatar and the entity, the virtual identity that exists in the interweb, is more of an asset than even our organic body, because we are able to transact and make more moves in business online than we are because of our ability to engage with the environment and how many different places we can be in on the internet to exist and communicate, versus in reality where you have one channel, voice, and well, two channels, body language and voice. And then on top of that, I think is this question I have for you, if that the reason why someone might choose to go down the route of entrepreneurial ventures versus collegiate is that there's a security system that's being developed for entrepreneurs equal to the sort of security system that is been developed for universities, and you can access lending to go down the venture of going to college. But how much lending can someone access to get the same assets that they could build a business over the course of 4 years that would equal the same network that you would establish over going to college?
It's very difficult when we make the comparison equally, and I don't make the comparison equally. So okay, your point is well taken. The whole idea of college and getting loans to go to college or different things or grants or whatever is that it's a predictable result through a predictable pathway, right? Does that make sense? Like, okay, you're going to go to school, you're going to get out. We can predict that the vast majority of people are going to graduate with this degree. They're going to make this much money. It's a risk assessment thing from a lending or an investment side. You say the risk is that you don't finish or you don't get a job, but likely you're going to do these things. Okay. In the world of digital experience, let's just say that, you have the two elements. When it comes to esports, everyone went bonkers like they did in the early .com years before it all blew up, with the idea that this is going to be the next big thing and all these billionaires are pouring millions in. I mean, we have to realize there's not a single esports organization right now making money in the positive, not the big ones, right? 100 Thieves, Liquid, Cloud9. I mean, I think Liquid was for a while, Cloud9 was for a bit, but you're talking about investments of hundreds of millions of dollars with no return that puts them in the black. So they got all excited about these billionaires, especially in sports entertainment, and they say, hey, the Jerry Jones and the Ray Davis and these people that own sports teams and organizations, we're going to hedge our bets and we're going to get involved in this. Okay, so that money is all pouring in there. Here's the thing that I would argue or put out to people. While college is warm and fuzzy for someone that says, it's predictable, it's tangible, esports and content creators or gamers, a digital lifestyle or making money through that digital lifestyle is not tangible. There's no course that says, hey, if you want to be a professional football player, mom and dad think you're going to make it, and they start you out in Pop Warner, and then you're in high school, then you're in select football, and you do all these kinds of things in college. We kind of know, right, what that course is. This world doesn't know. We don't, we can't put you into something that is very structured. So that being said, here's my contention. We know that you can, if you spent 4 years creating content, whether you're a streamer, a player, a coach, a videographer, or whatever it is, if you dedicated 4 years of if you had to live at home with your parents, work at Chipotle, and create content, I guarantee you, if you were tenacious about it, and always looked at ways to improve the way that we suggest or Gary V suggests, if you put in that same amount of time, chances are you would have a very successful growing career in the digital world. One that could in fact turn to 6 or 7 figure incomes, as many have done it. So the evidence is that it exists. So when people say, well, I need someone to, how do we get someone to invest in this business, this esports thing or whatever? I say you can, but at most levels, you could spend the same amount of time if you're patient, if you can. Now, if someone's married and has kids and financial responsibilities, please pay your bills. I'm not saying leave everything behind, but the opportunity to generate revenue, I'll give you an example. I'm an incredibly small streamer and my streams even drop because I've been super inconsistent with my streaming because I've been doing other things in the stadium and other content and other work now that we're actually here and we can get things ramped and going. But, within a period of a few months, of starting streaming, I was making $1,000 to $1,500 a month as a streamer. And what did it cost me, right? The initial equipment, you don't have to have fancy equipment. It just meant doing things the right way. And if I kept growing, completely focused on the stream, I guarantee you within a matter of a number of years and the time is shortening that I have a full-time seven-figure income from streaming. So that is what exists that doesn't exist. Like, that doesn't require any certifications. It doesn't require any validation, any investment. It requires work and understanding the right contextual approach to everything you do. And that bottom line is understanding this, and this is the main issue. Attention is the commodity that we exchange in the world today. And wherever the attention goes, opportunity follows. And where opportunity goes, money comes with it.
Absolutely. The hearing you talk about this, you have experience through time spent grinding. And my fear, anytime I talk with the youth, is they don't have the clarity that comes with, experience and wisdom. And that's the trouble when they look at the way that executives are currently running organizations of the at the top level, it's to a degree disingenuous, because of the way that esports is being sold to traditional forms of entertainment and media, sort of an empty carton aspect, and I'm a little bit worried about what that entails for the future of the youth that make the decision to forego going to college, or forego going to technical school, or forego going through these sort of societal measurements of adulting, and the process of accumulating this experience and maturity will result in many, a lot of people failing. Inversely, I think that university and collegiate and technical schools are far beyond capacity, and that the access to quality data and information is far more accessible and affordable on the internet.
Look, here's the bottom line. I mean, and you're right, but look at the overall concept here. Your generation, you bring up a point, your generation and younger has grown up in a time in human history that no one in our country especially, and no one has ever grown up in. When I grew up, or you know, kids my age, their parents didn't have two brand new cars, live in a nice house, have cell phones and all of this. Your generation, my kids, have grown up in an environment in world history that is very pampered. Now, I'm not saying that's bad. I'm saying that we as parents also worked really hard to make sure our kids could have the advantages that we didn't have. And a lot of that brought in, listen, I never knew a single kid in high school, not one single kid for the time I was there, that ever showed up in a brand new $50,000 Jeep. Okay. I knew a kid that had maybe a parent's, you know, Mercedes they drove once in a while. If you go to local high schools where my kids have gone, our youngest is still there.
I see where you're going with this.
They're full. They're full of brand new cars. Really expensive cars. Okay. Yeah. That's not inherently bad or good. What's inherently bad about it is that people, youth, are going to have a gut check, right? Because they're caught in the middle here. It's like,
you entered so high.
Well, yeah, you've understood, you've had comforts in life, and then you get out on your own and you go, oh, wait, this is hard, right? And mom and dad aren't paying for it anymore, and yet I still want to have it. So it's this quandary. I don't want to go the traditional route that my parents went, because, you know, like, if you're someone like me, I mean, I work 80 hours a week, I have my whole life and more, and I don't want to do that, but I also want to have the comforts. So there's going to have to be a gut check that says you got to be all in or all out. Society says, you know, continually now in my generation, though my generation is going to be dead and it won't matter, that, you know, education, college, you know, going through the structures, trade schools, all those things, that is the way. That is the gold standard measure. And I'm not saying that it's not important or it can't still be important in a person's life, and there are certain things you have to go for. What I'm saying is that people are recognizing that, yes, the problem on the other side of, yes, I can have a career in the digital world, esports, gaming, because I talk about that all the time. You can legitimately have a career. The problem is that you have to be ready. You have to understand the amount of work that it takes. Getting on and playing, people tell me all the time, I want to be a streamer. I want to be a full-time streamer. Okay, great. What do you do outside of streaming? Because for you, most of the people I look at, they're simply playing games with friends, right? And they think that somehow that's going to build a stream. What you don't understand is that you are a product. You are a product of a business that you're trying to prep, you know, that your business is trying to represent that is of value in the marketplace. And in return, that value has an exchange of money. So, and they don't realize that. They just think, you know, I mean, the digital world that your generation and younger has grown up in has said, you know, that money is easy. That look at, you know, I'm bougie throwing $1,000 bills out, you know, in my Lamborghini in front of my mansion or whatever. And all that's just a lie. It's all a lie. You know, anyone I've ever known that is a, you know, very successful millionaire or billionaire doesn't live a lifestyle like that unless they're trying to be some kind of influencer or there's someone that's just going to be unknown in 5 years because they were bougie for a time.
Right.
So that's kind of the issue here. The issue is that you have parents and people in society that say, go this traditional route. Kids say, no, I don't want to because I know it can be done otherwise or else, you know, in other ways, but aren't willing to step up in most cases and simply flat out put the work in. And so one of the things that Delta V and the whole concept here is that we, if we can get people as we get people engaged with us, they have a hands-on experience of having number one, the motivation, the inspiration, but number two, and that's great. And number two, having the hands-on ability to create an experience and realizing, you know, that it's going to take work. It's why I came up with a formula that I put out on different content before that says, you know, how many hours do you have in a week? We all have 168 hours, but how do you know how much you can spend on this? And therefore how quickly you can get to your objective. So the digital world, social media and different things have made it look like it's really easy. Oh, I'm just going to do, you know, one video and it's going to be viral and I'm going to be dog face and I'm going to get sponsored by, no, it's not. I mean, you're not. It's like saying, you know, I'm 5'10", therefore I'm going to be the next LeBron James. I mean, in most cases, you're just not. But by patience and persistence and a consistency in trial and error testing and a clear objective of where you want to go, the difference in the world and the way it exists today is you 100% can get there. It's just that 97% of all people will never put the work in. They'll simply, you know, go back to their thermostat of contentment. And that's the biggest challenge is people have been so content for so long in the way the world has been at a time in human history where we've never had this kind of comfort and leisure. They become content. They're really not content, right? I mean, but they it's easy to want to be content. And when you kind of feel like, well, I don't really have to have that car. I don't have to have, you know, that money in the bank or I don't have whatever. I can be happy here. Then they slow down. And the digital world doesn't allow that, right? If you want to have a career in esports, you want to have a career in gaming, you can't slow down. You can't take your foot off the accelerator.
Absolutely. You know, time flies and I'll have to have you back on the show. But before we close out here, I want to give you the opportunity to let people know how they can get connected to Delta V, Street Taco Eater, on Twitch and anything else that you would like to promote.
No, I appreciate that. All of the socials are Street Taco Eater, all one word, very easy to find. Delta V Esports is the website, deltavesports.com. We're on Discord. I stream. There's no shortage of content on any of the platforms, and there's even more coming. You are more than welcome. You know, I have people want to come by and visit the stadium. I am headquartered right now at the Esports Stadium, Arlington in Arlington, Texas. And so if I have people that want to come by, my assistant can schedule that. But we have a lot of programs online and, in person that we're continuing to launch now that we've been here, we're getting settled in. So yeah, I'm super easy to find. And if there's anything I can do in helping anyone, my whole motivation here is to grow this industry at the speed at which I think it can grow and to get there with people who are engaging in opportunities. So anything I can do to help the industry, I'm all on board.
Awesome. This has been Rob Street Taco Eater Davis of Delta V Esports. Again, thank you for listening.
Hey, y'all. It's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's esportsbiznet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.